Good evening, everyone. Good to see you. It's nice to sit with you, as usual. So tonight we're going to talk about, guess what? Mindful of what? Mindful. But right mindfulness is important. I mean, if we're going to the effort to do it, then why not do it right, you know? And it's not that you can do it wrong, but there is a process that's been tried and true. And so it's the shortest path to our complete happiness. And next week, we are going to begin, as the New Year's begins, fundamentals of meditation. So we're going to start from the very beginning and go through all the things that are important to remember, that enhances, that supports, that ensures that right mindfulness is happening, that we're not spinning our wheels. So right mindfulness, some might say it's the real center of Buddhism, because it's a component that enables the others in the Eightfold Path. So it's the basis of all the other components: right view, right understanding, right thought, right speech, right effort, right mindfulness. There it is, right concentration. The path, right there, the Eightfold Path. So really and truly, unless one is mindful, there cannot be, even with the first one, a right view. And so that's why it's important that we do it right. And so the Buddha taught meditation as a practice to develop mindfulness. And so mindfulness meditation leads to the insights and the wisdom that come up. Right view, the first one of the first of the Eightfold Path, that we're not separate, we're connected. So we develop the wisdom that awareness and the Buddha nature, or our original nature, is already within us. And we have to remind ourselves of that, just like we have to remind ourselves coming back to the breath over and over and over again. So this Buddha nature, it's the expression of pure love without sorrow. And we're thinking, is that possible? Especially in this particular climate of situations on the planet Earth right now. Well, you know what happens is with sincere and committed practice is we get a little of it as we go. So, and that's very compelling. And so it compels us to say, okay, yeah, this is right. Let's see if this is right. But mindfulness is the means by which we discover all kinds of insights about ourselves and about life. Because, as you well know, things do not appear as they are. And when we are totally present in the here and now, we begin not to stay there more. And in practicing and staying, we begin to directly experience what it does, what it opens. So it's just intentional paying attention, doing it on purpose, and witnessing what is transpiring. And without judgment, that's a biggie for us. And not even getting caught in consideration of I'm not doing it right, or I am doing it right, or it's I'm being good or bad, I'm wrong, I'm rude, I'm smart, I'm stupid. Simply just letting things be as they are, and knowing the nature of the mind, with that deep wisdom, we begin to not push our thoughts away or try to get rid of them. Now, we can release them with time, but we know we're not our thoughts. And if we meditate when thoughts come up, we know not to build a story out of them. So, this is important. And it can be thought of as thoughtless awareness. Pure awareness, or sometimes in the teachings you hear, bare attention. Without reference to the past or the future. Really, without any processing of the information that goes through us. Do you see how emptiness, what it means, emptiness? Empty of what? Well, empty of all that garbage that we carry around with us because it's optional and it's not necessary. But another thing our mindful practice brings impermanence into the foreground, it makes it undeniable. It really gives us a ringside seat on something we all know that's true, but let's not talk about it. Let's ignore it. Maybe it won't happen to me. So with mindfulness, we do get a clear-eyed view of oneself and one's direct sensory experience. We are experiencing life completely, 100%, in the present moment. Otherwise, we're creating and making up. But mindfulness also has a hidden agenda. It's a mission. The mission is to put the ego, or ourself, self-made identity, into perspective. Not to get rid of it, not to do anything with it, but know it. That's it. So, because that is what obstructs clarity. It has a great influence on clarity. So the ego is important. And so mindfulness encourages the wisdom of knowing that the true nature of ourself is constructed. This is your mind, this is yourself. Along the way, we get information that we cling to, that we identify with, and we create an artificial self, which is nothing's wrong with it, it's useful, we know that. But we also know that it is limited and it's important. So, how can we stay attached to things in the same way? And this happens just because of that we practice. Because we begin to see for ourselves, directly that everything is constantly changing. And we become less and less threatened by it and more interested about it. Because we begin to see for ourselves directly the causes of our suffering is holding on to thoughts, holding on to feelings, holding on to stories, holding on to the past, the second noble truth. So why do we cling to our things and the pleasure or our opinions? Well, that wisdom helps us, because when we understand that nothing lasts and everything is changing constantly, everything shifts. Now, I don't mean that we always will remember that or know that, but we've given enough attention to it where it's there within us. While it does not necessarily make the painful aspects of impermanence disappear, it does help us to become more accepting. Accepting of impermanence, giving it some time in our lives to reflect on. Because truly, that is not something that in this society I have found that people want to sit around and talk about. Us dying. And yet, when we do open up that possibility, and many times it's in the Sangha or with members of the Sangha, then it's a relief. It's sharing the fear of death. And as human beings, we're going to fear death because we're created to stay alive. So, impermanence, it does help us to become more accepting of all of life we can't control. All of a sudden, we begin to see we are not in control. And that part is scary, and it takes a lot of courage to reach that point. So with mindfulness bringing impermanence to the foreground, it makes it undeniable. We can no longer run from it. And it is through that painful path of wisdom that we're healed. Healed? What does that mean? That means we have the wisdom to live with it with complete knowledge that it's okay. So Dogen says the whole universe shatters into 100 pieces in the great death. There's no heaven. There's no earth. Once body and mind have turned over, there's only this to say. Past mind cannot be grasped. Present mind cannot be grasped. Future mind cannot be grasped. And there's a part of us that is connected to the rational mind that says, holy moly, that's crazy. And yet, our other perspective, where the other foot rests, that we have directly experienced, that there's more to us than that. So again, impermanence and seeing what we see as we go inside and we begin to see outside too, it gives us, it's bringing to our attention a deep, deep wisdom that will cause more happiness, more ease. So the path of pain that we experience learning this wisdom, like I said earlier, is healing. It takes courage to sit and look at these difficult things that the mind is listening to. Because it does not want to give up its control. So we can't resist it. We can allow it, fall into it, and just be with all the laws of nature that promise us that it will free us. And we have enough teachings and have had enough experiences in the truth of the teachings where we keep going for deeper and deeper and more subtle lessons. And so, in rubbing up against the underlying fabric of impermanence and seeing it both inside and out, one thing becomes apparent, and that this self-important ego is a superficial manifestation of our most primal attempt to control. To control and avoid the way things are. It's all about control. And where does that put us? That puts us in that mind state that we are the center of the universe. See how that has to be right view, you know, right view where it supports mindfulness, that we're all connected and that we can be open to that connectedness. So as a self develops along the years, the need to maximize the feeling of self-importance persists. It's kind of like you retire, but before you retired, you were someone. Oh, you were Mrs. Gribben. We know you. There's a whole list of what I identified with and others identified me with. But what a relief it was to let that world go and to know, as Randy used to say to me, you're not the principal, you know. So, self-centeredness is something that automatically starts coming up. And it's painful. And we slip in and out all the time. I mean, I certainly do. I mean, sometimes this ego does something, and then when I wake up or I reflect on it, I just cringe, you know. How could you, ego? How could you? But again, we are perfectly imperfect. We have this ego. It's going to be there. We're not going to kill it. We're not going to try to get rid of it. We're just going to try to get to know it. And so, we just keep on keeping on. And, you know, the mind thinking selfishly is one of the things the mind does best. Me, 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 you know. I'm certainly talking about myself. But even when we become still, it's just latent. And not so long, if that's the ego, me, 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 that's okay. We want to know the truth of it. But the ego doesn't have to define us. And so we begin to know how to live with it, without it embarrassing us so much. So, and we know how to rein on it, recognize it, allow, investigate, heal the misunderstanding of the things in our life that cause us misery. So, I'm going to go on down to this last part because I think it's important. Because what enables us to do a lot of these things that we're talking about is because, again, we turn ourselves towards with good intentions to forgive ourselves and to forgive others. Hallelujah, hallelujah. So I learned from Jack Kornfield, who coined some phrases that I've kept through the years, but he says, make up your own. Make them personal. But the ones I say that he taught me many years ago, asking forgiveness of others and ourselves. There are many ways that I have hurt and harmed others and myself, betrayed or abandoned us, caused us suffering, knowingly or unknowingly. Out of my pain, fear, anger, confusion. So I ask for forgiveness. And I forgive myself. And so offering forgiveness to those who have harmed us is the same types of phrasing. There are many ways that I have harmed others, abused or abandoned, knowingly or unknowingly, in thought, word, or deed. So, we forgive others. I offer my forgiveness. I didn't say that right. There are many ways that I have been harmed by others, abused, or abandoned. I had some looks out there that I read. So that is those who have caused us harm. We can forgive them. And in this practice, as you well know, forgiveness and metta are two very strong tools that will support the effort of knowing and loving ourselves. And when that knowing and loving ourselves is ripened, I don't know when it happens, then the journey really begins to flow. So thank you. I'll stop there.